Well, at least he's consistent. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michael.
And great to be with you tonight, Barry, as always. Don't like the subjects we're talking about, but they have to be discussed.
Well, Chuck, it's just that season. We're in January of a new year after a presidential election, and so we have a new Congress that is formed, and we have the inauguration of the winner of the presidential election. Well, this time around, it was Barack Obama again, as everybody is fully and painfully well aware of, and he, on Martin Luther King Day, he was sworn in on Sunday, Chuck, because by the Constitution, it has to be by the 20th, but they had the public celebrations and observances and ceremonies on Monday the 21st. Not coincidentally, I don't believe, Martin Luther King Day. Trying to draw those historic parallels, I suppose. Well, you know, Chuck, there's one thing you can't say about Barack Obama. You can't say that he hides what he's going to do. When he first ran for office for the 2008 nomination, he told people right up front what his game plan was. Very few people believed him. They thought it was campaign rhetoric. So when he gets elected president, what does he do? He starts working on that agenda. During the 2012 election, the debates, etc., Barack Obama told you exactly what he wanted to do. And Monday was no different. Barack Obama, in his inaugural speech, laid out exactly what he is planning on doing. Now, for anybody who sits back and says they're shocked or surprised that the president did this, this, and that, well, either they're not paying attention, Chuck, or they're having trouble understanding plain language. Because he really, maybe he is delivering it maybe a little couched in certain instances over certain issues, but by and large, Barack Obama is telling you exactly what you're going to get with him. Always has. I think he always will. I think that that goes to a certain hubris or arrogance in relation to this current president. But I think what we need to do over this program, and possibly tomorrow, I'm assuming probably on Friday, we are going to deconstruct and look at what President Barack Obama is actually saying in his inaugural. Because, again, he's setting the tone, he's setting the theme, Chuck. He's telling people exactly what he's planning on launching, initializing, or accomplishing from the executive office during these 4 years.
Well, you know, Barry, to show you, gosh, the difference in the way America thinks about its presidents. We actually went during one presidential cycle, one day without a president of the United States, because Zachary Taylor refused to be sworn in on a Sunday.
Good for Mr. Taylor.
He refused. And now normally what happens when inauguration day is on a Sunday, because of this, they either do the swearing in on Saturday or privately on Sunday. They didn't do a public swearing in anymore on Sunday. But Zach Taylor said, no, I'm not taking the oath of office under any circumstances on Sunday. So we actually had no president for a day, or the vice president was actually the acting president. And under that term, that was no big deal. But the fact is that what is going on here with Barack Obama is that he is taking his, 3% election margin and attempting to turn it into a mandate, which he doesn't have. What he has is a very strongly divided country with, he truly is a polarizing figure. And he basically makes you look and say, well, I'm not going with that. But the problem is, Barry, that one of the reasons that he won re-election was the fact that the Republicans were completely unable to gin up any excitement whatsoever for Mitt Romney. Essentially, the conservative wing stayed home. As scared as they are of Barack Obama, and the fact is they're afraid of him, when in fact Congress is completely able to block him if they so choose, and of course the constituents can force them to so choose, as happened with the re-election of Bill Clinton. If you recall, Bill Clinton's second term was essentially not very productive from a progressive standpoint because Congress wouldn't let him do the thing. They just basically stood up and said, no, you're not doing that. And you didn't have to be very conservative to stand in opposition to Bill Clinton, which is why Newt Gingrich still is thought of as a conservative, even though he is not.
Well, some people still make that mistake, but there's no mistake to be made with Barack Obama. I said, let's take one of the themes that he was talking about in his second inaugural speech on Monday. And he basically said that Americans are made for this moment and must seize it together. Now, that's interesting because he took his campaign apparatus, Obama for America, and turned it into Organizing for America, a nonprofit organization that's keeping all those names and email addresses and supporter lists, and I'm assuming whatever money's left in it, to go out and stump for a, well, shall we say, a Democratic mandate for his policy initiatives. In other words, Congress will get blasted with faxes, emails, phone calls, sit-ins, occupyings, etc., in order to get them to capitulate to the president's policy agenda. And so that's what he's talking about, this moment and seizing it together. You know, it's interesting he's using those Marxist terminologies of seizing these things, not let's work together toward achieving anything, just seize it, just take it. And, well, and that's a difference between statesmen and someone who is has been steeped in and imbibed Marxist dialectic.
I think one of the most ironic statements in his inaugural address is this one. Quote, "We cannot mistake absolutism for principle or substitute spectacle for politics or treat name-calling as reasoned debate," Obama said from atop the Capitol steps overlooking the National Mall.
Well, you know,
Barry.
Yes.
This man used every one of these things his entire first 4 years and really turned the heat up during the campaign of these three things. He definitely put out absolutism as his guiding principle, absolutism on homosexuality, absolutism on the economy, absolutism on his personal authority. He did substitute spectacle for politics. The fact is that everything with him is a dog and pony show, as we witnessed with that whole thing when he came out the now is the time proposal on the, where he said he was to issue the 23 executive orders, which, by the way, he hasn't issued yet.
Well, remember, he was careful. He wasn't going to call them executive orders because he knew he was going to get a constitutional challenge. He called them presidential memoranda. It's like he's sending a memo to the supervisor of the department that, well, we need to change this the way we're doing things. He's very careful about that, for sure. But you're right, and that's the reason why I was kind of chuckling a little bit, was every one of these things were things that they were doing in his first term. But now that he's now settling into a second term, this is framing the opposition, Chuck. And that's exactly what this is, because, okay, absolutism means standing up against Obama's mandates or standing up against policies like gun control and open borders and homosexual rights and tax increases for the quote-unquote wealthy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those things, if you stand against them, you're being an absolutist, because those are principled ideas coming from a person with an overwhelming mandate from the people.
Well, and 48% is hardly overwhelming.
Ah, yes. But you know, that's the reason why we're all coming together and we're made for this moment and we got to seize it together. So, and who are we seizing it from is the question, because it looks to me like the Democrats, especially the executive level and in the Senate, actually maintained a majority. So who are we seizing that from now? But, you know, he also talked about a number of other things, Chuck, which I think are very telling of some of the priorities of his administration for the second administration. Now, just like any other president or candidate, he is saying words about revamping the tax code and remaking government. And as he says, reduce the federal deficit without shredding the social safety. Well, in order to reduce the federal deficit, you have to quit spending at a rate that is well above what you can legitimately take in. But that's not something that this administration is proposing or has ever proposed. But it's interesting to see some of these things, because you would think you would hear some specific budget issues or a call to Senator Reid as the Senate Majority Leader to pass a budget. No, what you really heard here more than anything else was, number one, liberal policies such as climate change, that we have to deal with climate change. Now, I'm not sure how that helps the federal deficit, Chuck, or reshapes government. Well, maybe I do know how it reshapes government, but that doesn't sound to me like something that to deal with the issues that are really facing us in this country, which are massive unemployment, economic collapse, a foreign policy that, shall we say, is a little schizophrenic, and a divisiveness in this country that is, well, I'm assuming that we're just being absolutists because we stand on principle.
Well, look, the fact is that they play economic number games. If you'll recall, the impetus for the Obamacare Affordable Health Care Act, laughably misnamed, was the idea that we were all actually going to save money by passing this thing. It was going to cost less and less because we were going to control costs by having all these panels that were going to do this and do that. These were Sarah Palin's infamous death panels, which she was made fun of incessantly for claiming what these were. And now as we get closer and look at them, that's exactly what they are, because those panels will decide who gets treatment and who doesn't. Unelected bureaucrats will sit around and decide whether you get a kidney dialysis or whatever based on your age and your usefulness, quote unquote, to society. Okay. These are the kind of quote-unquote ideals that these people have. Now, how is it different from the system that we have now where not everybody gets kidney dialysis? It's not. It's just that the government now makes the decision. This is the kind of political philosophy we're dealing with here. All these things, we're talking about stopping quote-unquote climate change. And look, Barry, one of the things that makes that name laughable, the climate is always changing. And I don't just mean season to season. The Sahara Desert used to be a forest, and it had nothing to do with man-made global warming. It had to do with weather patterns changing. The fact is, climate change goes on all the time. The Earth is very dynamic. And yet these guys use this as an excuse to, we're going to save you money by doing carbon exchanges and closing power plants and forcing you onto electric systems that are wind powered and solar powered. Barry, there's not enough space in the world to put up enough wind turbines and electric solar generators to get the same amount of energy we get out of burning coal and natural gas. It can't be done. And yet these guys know this. That, let's not kid ourselves. They know this, but they are willing to sell the idea to you to give them control. This is about seizing control. And again, there's that word seize, and that's exactly what they want to do. They want to seize control.
Well, of course, because if you don't seize control, you can't carry out your agenda. And that's one of many things. The other thing, one of the other things he said was that he basically says it, our journey, I love how he talks in these broad sweeping terms, our journey is not complete until our gay brothers and sisters are treated like anyone else under the law. Well, as they like to kid about George W. Bush on the aircraft carrier with the banner, mission accomplished, Mr. President, because those who are engaging in homosexual behavior are treated like anyone else under the law. There is no difference. They're treated just like an individual human being under the law. It's when they violate the laws that they come under a penalty, just like anybody else who would violate the laws. Now, I think what he's trying to say is here, we're going to change the laws to make something that's immoral, illegal, and, well, let's just be quite honest with it, destructive, a protected, promoted, celebrated part of our legal heritage.
And give it basically equal status with the heterosexual relationship, which can do many things that the homosexual relationship cannot. One of them is produce children. You cannot produce children in any kind of normal sense in a homosexual relationship. It requires artificial methodology, which basically spits in the face of the creator who created the original system and made it work the way it does. What we're saying basically is that we're spitting in your face. We can do it without you. It's the old joke about the scientist who challenges God and says, I can make life now by myself. I don't need you. And God says, okay, I challenge you. Mm-hmm. And they both show up and God says, you go first. And the scientist leans down and starts to put together some dirt into a test tube. And God says, whoa, 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 stop. First, you got to make your own dirt. This is a form of arrogance, of course, that only God is allowed to have that particular attitude, because he did make the dirt, he did design life, and he did make it do what it does for a reason. And this idea that we can come in and change things around and say we know better than God, we are not only spitting in his face, but we're also planting the seeds of our own destruction. And one can see that in homosexual relationships. Unfortunately, the rate of suicide is higher. The life expectancy is significantly lower, especially in males. Men tend to die about 20 or 25 years shorter in the male homosexual community, for obvious reasons if you think about it. There are any number of problems, and it is not normal. It's not healthy, and this idea that we're suddenly going to make it normal and healthy by decree simply doesn't work. It's never worked in the past, and it won't work now. Now, I'm looking at the clock, Barry. We're out of time.
I figured we might be. We have some other things we need to talk about some of the comments and quotes from his inauguration and understanding exactly what he's saying. So I hope our listeners will come back tomorrow to see the same thing.
Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.